Holiday cheer breakfast? Is that what you're talking about?
The holiday cheer breakfast at Shaw Center. Yep. So that's always, that's really in Ottawa, the snooty beginning of Christmas.
Kicks it off for you.
When all the important people get together, Shaw Center and hobnob, and the season begins. And I think we're going to be there live, right? There was some
Yeah.
talk about whether or not we'd do the broadcast there this year. But everything is kind of returning to normal. At least in a COVID lockdown sense, everything is returning to normal. So that's a big part of it. Although it happened last year as well. And I didn't go because I had COVID symptoms. We had to go online and fill out a form. And I filled it out honestly, and they turned me down.
Yeah.
It's tough to know now, isn't it, when people ask you? Because we've had a couple of appointments, like your doctor's, veterinarian, stuff like that, where you have to fill out forms still. And you look at it and go, well, I do have a little bit of the sniffles, but I'm pretty sure it's allergies. But if I put that in, I can't do what I need to do.
Yeah. How many, yes, I have this symptom. Does it require for them to lock the doors and say, get out? Is it one?
Well,
Is it all
usually
of
just
them?
one.
Yeah, right.
But then you got to ask yourself, okay, but are you really sure that it's not a symptom of the flu, or, well, it's just COVID, the questionnaire about the flu or RSV or whatever? I usually know when my symptoms are allergies now. But it doesn't mean you're not wrong every once in a while. So I don't know. The world is complicated these days. I see it. RSV is really starting to decline now, but the flu is taking off. Lots of flu cases. Flu season just really hasn't peaked yet. It's still heating up. So my kids seemed a little better yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
Hopefully their symptoms will pass enough that they can put on a mask and get out the door. Hard to avoid sick people in your own house, isn't it?
Yep.
But somehow I'm managing just by going, get back from me.
6 feet, 6 feet.
I thought you were in the basement when
So
everyone's sick.
far, I've been spared the basement.
Oh, improvement.
Yeah, doing really well in that department. Actually, my son was in the basement because the biggest TV's down there, and he's sick.
Oh, well, he's smart.
He's
That's the place to
smart
be.
about all the things that don't matter, and he's a teenager about all the things that do.
Well, there you go.
How are you this morning, Annette?
Oh, speaking of sick, my voice sound a little harsh, maybe. I don't know.
Not too bad, actually.
No.
Coming across better than you think.
Raw. It feels raw. I have
Oh,
no
well,
other symptoms.
I can't tell you how it feels by listening to you,
Yeah, that's
but
true.
sometimes though your ears are also plugged up, so your voice sounds even worse than to you than it does to other people.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. It's
Well,
just
I'm
that
sorry you're still
feeling.
not feeling better.
Oh, it's
Did
that
you give it to the
feeling.
kids yet?
No, not yet. No, not
Well, I
yet.
mean, it's time, isn't
I know, right? They give it to me. Like, this should
it?
be payback. All right, you guys. I'm going to come cough in your mouth like you do to me. Yeah.
So, what is, do you guys go CTV Morning Live? Do you go to that Christmas cheer breakfast?
No, because we are on the air.
Oh, but you could do the show there.
We don't. No, we don't. We've never done the show.
I shouldn't even volunteer that, should I?
I shouldn't say that. We've sent like a live eye reporter there. So we've done that. And
Not the
we've
same as the free breakfast.
Yeah, and that would be such a good breakfast. You're making me hungry.
You know, the problem is when we used to be in the room,
Yeah.
we would annoy people because we'd be at the back of the room doing our show and they'd be shushing us. Shh, shh. Because there are people on stage talking or singing or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And also we couldn't hear what we were doing. So then we got moved out into the hallway and people on the way by, they wave, "Hey, Bill." They go inside and we're out there alone. By the
Yeah.
time everybody's seated, it's like, well, I'm glad we're here talking because we might as well be in the studio at that point.
Must be a
So.
little hard then. Yeah, those broadcasts on location.
Yeah, it's a strange one.
Yeah.
A strange one to do
Are you
because
doing,
it's
is that
not
today?
just a breakfast, right? It's because if you were up on the stage like Bill's Big Breakfast, we were doing the show and people were listening to the show.
Right.
So that was the point. But there's another show going on at the same time.
Yes, yeah.
And I didn't think we were going to go, and then we were going to go. It's all very confusing this week. We've changed our mind, and now it looks like it's back on again. So
So you're going. What day is that?
Friday.
Okay.
Yep. Friday. So that's
Do you get to eat while you're on the air or like in commercial breaks or something?
Yeah, somebody usually brings food out to us.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be Katie's job. I don't know if she'll be as good at elbowing people out of the way to get to the food as Matt was. But we'll find out.
You got to be aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, in those things, you just.
I'll just stand by the door when it comes out.
Never mind the good spirit of Christmas cheer. It's all for one. You just get up there and you get your eggs before everyone gets them. And you better get Bill some bacon.
It's the bacon.
Yeah.
You cannot. It should be illegal for you to be in the room where bacon is being served and not have it.
Well, yeah. Like, and should there be a limit? Like, can you only get 2 strips of bacon? 3?
Well, I've never seen such a limit.
You know?
We've always managed to get a little bit more than that.
I mean, how disappointed
would
you be?
But it's buffet style, though, right?
That's true. So they'll have enough for
everybody.
You know,
grab 12 pieces.
A plate full of bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez, that would be good right now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's starting to make me hungry again. That's the second time this week we've
talked about food
this early in the morning. Not a good thing.
Oh.
What's happening in the newsroom? What's cracking?
Well, we're going to get the detailed look at what went wrong with LRT today. The public inquiry into stage 1 is going to be released at 11 a.m. We're going to be airing it right here on CFRA, so you can listen in. And
that might be long.
Yeah.
Because a lot went wrong.
A lot went wrong. Yeah, the list is on and on. It's as long as, you know, your list to Santa. The inquiry looked into the commercial and technical circumstances. So, I mean, really everything. That led to many, many issues. I mean, where do we begin? And they started really from day one, right? The damn doors. I'm, you know, paraphrasing the mayor here.
Well, before that, not on time.
Not on time.
Not on budget.
Yeah. The switchers,
square wheels?
Wheels, yeah. Yeah.
And forget the wheels.
Oh, they were bad. I'm not a regular user of LRT because of my hours. And so the first time I think I used it was for Blues Fest this past year. And a friend and I, we were on the train and I said, oh my God, you got to be, that's the wheels. That's the wheels everybody's talking about. I couldn't believe it.
You mean the sound?
The sound. Like, you know, it sounds
like it's like the cars never fit the tracks. Right, it's like it was a mismatch, like a pair of jeans that are too tight.
Yep.
It every felt time like you put them on, you squeal.
Well, it felt like something like some rickety old system that, you know, was really old. That, you know, it was shocking.
You forgot the smells.
The smells were
one of the stations always, I think the
Rideau.
Yeah.
It was Rideau, right? That had the leaks.
No, was it Parliament?
Okay, maybe. Oh, yes. You're right.
One of them smells like sewage at all times.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice touch.
And then there were the leaky spots in the Rideau Center station.
Yeah. And the sinkhole. Let's not forget the sinkhole.
Yeah.
During construction, that was a good one.
Which was a major factor for why things were delayed. And we heard that in the inquiry.
Yeah. Sort of self-inflicted, I think. But
so you tune in at 11. You might get it wrapped up by about 9 p.m. tonight. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Well, having a little fun with it. But there will be recommendations. And Mayor Mark Sutcliffe said he will go forward with putting those recommendations into action for how to avoid, like any inquiry, this from potentially happening again, these problems. So.
Don't you have to, maybe he's seen it already, but don't you have to wait to see what the recommendations are before you say you're going to go ahead and do them?
Well, yeah.
Some of them might be pretty hard to do.
You never know.
Right? I mean,
we'll see.
It's not going to, but conceivably they could say, well, replace all the tracks.
Yeah.
That'll get rid of the squealing sound. Well, we can't do that.
Yeah.
That would be a little expensive. Or just, you know.
Start again.
WD-40 every morning. On the squeaky points. We have a friend who lives in a condo above one of the stations.
Mm-hmm.
And the noise... I haven't been to his place in a while, but the noise was deafening up there.
Really, eh?
As every train made that final curve into Herdman.
Wow.
It's just, would be hard to live there listening to that much noise. Now, I know it got better, but how much better it got, I don't know.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, they bought, right, condos and homes that were on LRT routes so that they were close.
Sure, makes sense, right?
Right, makes sense for your own commute, for the value of the home long term. Yeah. If you're showing that apartment, if you're showing that condo, you don't want to do it at a time when a train goes by if the wheels sound like that.
Yeah. So, anything else you're working on?
A few other things. We've got, let's see. Well, there's also the bill that was struck down, 124, by a judge as a result of that would essentially have limited wages for public sector workers to 1% in Ontario. It was
a constitutional challenge there.
Yeah.
The judge saying.
So that's another
story.
They
have a right to at least have a conversation about the wages.
Right. Yes. I mean,
before you impose them, well, let's have that much freedom at least.
Yeah.
The Ford government is going to appeal that one.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Katie, we talked about this last night, whether or not to spend any time getting a lawyer to kind of break it down for us or.
Well,
I don't know. Yeah. You know,
with it being struck
down, interesting for sure.
Yep.
But.
Hey.
I don't know that much has changed.
Renfrew's
understanding. It's just an ongoing court battle. We knew it'd be likely be appealed if they lost, and
right.
appealed by the other side if they didn't win.
Right.
So, Alex Ovechkin beat a Gretzky record.
I heard.
The most goals scored on the road.
Yeah.
It's a bit specific.
And there was another one, too. I think 135 off the faceoff, too. Another record as well for him.
Is that true?
I believe so. This is me listening to CFRA overnight radio, so I'd have to double check because, you know, overnight. But
he's plugging along, and he will probably one day score more goals than Gretzky.
He will break that record?
Yeah, now it's going to take him longer to do it than it took Gretzky. And, the thing about Wayne Gretzky is, his goal-scoring record people thought would stand for an eternity, and now if Ovechkin hangs around for a couple of years, he's getting older, but he's like a bull. He's really fit and really strong. And
yeah.
Still scoring a very high elite level. But the thing about Gretzky is if you beat his incredible goal-scoring record, you still have to go, yeah, but he wasn't even a goal scorer. That's not even what he was best at.
Right.
He just collected so many points over his career. It wasn't. You know, they played till he was, maybe 37 or something?
Yeah.
Ovechkin will go longer than that. Anyway, it's not nothing. That's pretty big. But
no.
It's weird that Gretzky scored many more goals at home than he did on the road.
And how many years is Ovechkin in, is he looking at, what's his contract? Does he have years to play still?
It's all going to be about his health now.
Right. Yeah.
And he'll need a couple more seasons to do it, at least, I would think. But
wow.
But if anyone can do it, he doesn't miss a lot of games. He's a guy who, he's pretty tough to knock down. He's not that tall, but he's wide.
Yeah, he's a big fella.
Yeah. That's my sports one for the day, because no one's playing hockey that I care about last night.
Yeah.
The Sens play tonight, though.
They do. Oh, goodness.
Back home after two wins on the road, two in a row. Two-game winning streak.
Yeah.
Winning Sens are at home. They're not in last place anymore. Woo-hoo. All right, Annette, I'll let you slide out of here.
Oh, here it is. It was his 135th game opening goal, tying Jaromir Jagr for the most in the NHL's history books. So opening goal right off the face off.
You knew there was something going on. And that was last night as well. He scored two goals last night.
Yeah. Okay. There you
again,
are.
You know, they're fairly specific, but it's not like more goals than anyone ever scored on a Tuesday night in an 8 o'clock start game. You know, you hear those records sometimes. Think, well, yes, let's put up a plaque to that.
Yeah.
Got stats for everything.
But, the first goal of a game is very important.
Absolutely.
Sets the tone. Unless you're the Leafs, then it's just, setting you up to be more angry when they lose. All right, Annette, thank you. That's Rosie's voice we heard there. Good morning,
Hello.
Rosie.
Hello. Jumping in there.
I was at the golf club yesterday doing an indoor lesson and looking out the window.
Yes.
It looked like you could golf. Everything was so green beautiful.
Yeah.
It sort of felt mild. I mean, wasn't mild enough to golf.
Right, sure.
But but given what we, I didn't even wear my jacket from the car to go inside. But then I look at the temperature we're supposed to have today and you really almost could, except there's probably going to be some rain.
Yeah,
right?
Just a little bit of rain to get in the way of your golf. Yeah, we can expect at times a bit heavy, actually. This is a fairly large system. So once it starts up this morning, you're going to see waves of rain, periods of rain throughout the day. It's going to be like, oh, okay, I need my umbrella. It's raining. But you won't need a big, heavy winter coat because it's going to be fairly mild. We're going up to a high of 8 degrees today. So you got a mild day today and then cloudy tomorrow with a few flurries. So count them tomorrow, Bill, for me. Count the flurries tomorrow. I'm saying a few. Just a
if
few.
It's, what's a few? More, fewer than five or six?
Yeah, you get...
You six
get,
or seven flurries, that's a handful of flurries.
You get a dozen flurries, and then you can call me and go, hey, you said a few. We'll go up to high of zero tomorrow, and then...
What do you say, a few flurries? Does that mean a few times when there'll be a little bit of snow? Or the snow is sparse as it's falling?
As it's falling, right. Yeah.
Isn't that scattered flurries, or is that when... Some areas get flurries and some areas don't.
Right. All scattered. The same geographically. Exactly. That's no, scattered. Okay. That's scattered. There
gotcha.
You go.
Like
you
my
got
brain
it?
In the morning.
I'm
six.
With you there. Hey, I've got a sunny sky for you on Friday. Nice way to end off the week.
But do you have warm sunny skies?
It's not going to be as warm, but temperatures slightly above seasonal. 3 degrees. Okay. 3 degrees.
Because this is the time of year when warm, that sunny starts to mean cold.
You're right. When you get that beautiful, I go, it's going to be a crisp, sunny day. And you go, whoa. You just said crisp and sunny.
Crisp is not good unless it's
cold.
Potato chips.
Oh, yeah.
Then you want them. That's what we called them in Scotland. You probably know that.
Yeah. Crisps. I love that. Mm-hmm. And then chips.
Mum, can I get a wee bag of crisps?
There you go. And then chips, French fries.
Yeah, French fries we call chips, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And chips we call crisps.
Crisps.
But
all
we'll
are
eat
good.
Either of them. We don't care. Ugh. It's all nicely fried potatoes.
So good. And did you put ketchup on the chips?
No, brown sauce.
Oh, brown. Ooh, nice.
We weren't Scotland. Maybe that's changed now, but
okay.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even see ketchup until we moved to Canada.
You know, I think that you're right, even in the UK as well. It's, malt vinegar. You have to ask for ketchup.
Yeah, salt and malt.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Which I love on my fish and chips.
Oh, so
my
good.
Favorite thing. Yeah. So, it's
too.
Funny you develop certain tastes.
Yes.
Of course I've eaten fries with ketchup.
Ketchup. Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure.
But it's not my first choice.
No.
Still not a big, big ketchup guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, it's not a thing. It's not a thing in Scotland, and I think in the UK as well. In England, I think
the high school cafeteria.
Yeah,
it's called the CAF.
Yeah,
go to the CAF and get some French fries. If our parents knew, that's what we bought with our lunch money. Just the fries,
so
right?
So bad. Yeah,
they'd make fun of me because they'd all pile on the ketchup, and I'd be looking for the salt and vinegar.
And it's,
like some weird old man.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a bit sophisticated when you're in high school looking for salt and vinegar. Yeah. I was like, what?
I don't really like ketchup. Which didn't mean I didn't occasionally dip one of my fries into somebody else's ketchup bowl.
Oh.
Every once in a while, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I love to do? I love to eat other people's fries. I go, nah, I don't want any fries.
Because
right?
There are no calories in other people's fries.
Thank you. You get me, Bill. You get me.
That's
it.
That's the beauty of them. Doesn't that annoy you, though, when other people say, I'm not ordering the fries, and then they eat half of yours?
Yeah, exactly. You can't do that. If I order the fries, I'm fully committed, and it's really hard for me to share.
I might give you one or two.
Okay.
Up front, pre-selected. And you know which ones I give up? The skinny, crispy ones.
Oh, the awful ones.
I want the big, fat, meaty, potato-y ones.
Oh, man.
But it worked out well with me and Sylvie because she likes the little crispy pieces and I like the big fat.
See, you guys.
And so we just split it up.
Two peas in a pod.
Or I'm the pod, she's the pea. Or the other way around, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
All right, I'll let you go and do your weather thing. And we'll see you later on this morning.
All right, see you in a bit.
All right, it's 5:31. It's the morning meeting, live at 5. Just going over some of these numbers from Ottawa Public Health. They release twice a week now. 4 people in our ICUs because of active COVID. And 113 confirmed patients in Ottawa hospitals as of Sunday. That includes non-Ottawa residents. But 47 of them are there because of COVID. And the rest are there and happen to have COVID. So I don't know that there's anything there worth doing an update on for the show. I was just checking to see if there's anything extraordinary jumping out about them. But I mean, you don't want to have one of your loved ones in the ICU. But four in a city this size is not huge. But that's the problem isn't in our regular hospitals and with COVID. The problem is now with the flu, and now to a slightly lesser degree RSV, in our pediatric hospitals. So nothing there. Maybe, Katie, do we do an update with CHEO about what's happening there? I was reading also that Orange is seeing a lot more, or not a lot more, but an uptick definitely in kids they're transporting to emergency. You know, the air ambulance people?
Yeah, helicopter.
I don't know. I mean, maybe
I can look into that.
Shockingly new enough to keep talking about COVID and the flu and RSV. I think most of us are just going, I know it's out there. I'll be careful when I have to be, but I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to hear about it. We're living our lives. That exists. Like a lot of other risks now, that exists, is where many people, I think, have settled into. So what are you working on for 2 hours from now?
Louis Capaldi is on TikTok promoting his new song that's scheduled to come out in a couple of days. And I've listened to a clip that he's posted. I think it sounds very good. The best thing about Louis Capaldi, though, he's really taking on TikTok in stride. And this was his first initial announcement that he was coming out with a new song. Here's the teaser clip.
Hello there, I'm Louis Capaldi, and I realize that all my songs are depressing, so I've written one that is about love and loving people. So enjoy. That's the wrong chord.
That's the whole TikTok. Nobody else got any further information. So people were speculating.
That's it. He stopped it. That's the wrong. That's yep. It. That's the wrong chord.
Wrong chord.
I wonder where he's from.
Yeah, I know. Shocker.
Do we know where in Scotland he's from?
Actually, no, I don't. I'll look into that. But I love him.
Because the accent, it's got to be near Glasgow.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Can you play the clip again? I'm good with Scottish accents.
Hello there, I'm Louis Capaldi, and I realize that all my songs are depressing, so I've written one that is about love and loving people. So
okay,
enjoy.
Written.
That's
the way he says written. Yeah, I would say because if you're not Scottish, Scottish accent is a Scottish accent. But if you are Scottish, you can regionalize it. And I'm going with Glasgow.
Yeah, see, I'm never been to Scotland, so I couldn't tell you the different accents. But he does sound very familiar. So yes, he is from Glasgow.
That's your guess now?
No, that's have the answer. That's the answer, yeah. So it was similar when I was listening to it, and that's probably why, you know, I love him so much. I watch all of his videos. I'm super excited when he releases new music. But no, I looked it up here. He was born in Glasgow.
There you go. Makes total sense.
Yippers.
I don't know who this person is.
You don't know Louis Capaldi?
No. Like, so.
And you must have played some of his music DJing for sure. Well, if you like, the next clip, I was going to save it for later, but we can play the next clip of his new. Okay. All right.
Well, no, I want to hear a little bit of it now.
This is the new song, an actual.
Oh, but I want to hear one of his. You're saying he's had hit songs.
Oh, tons.
Because PJ, I'm kind of half tempted to let you take the bullet, but I only read about Louis Capaldi a couple of days ago.
Actually,
for the first time. I'd never heard of him.
Really? This is shocking. Well, I don't have any clips of his hit songs just because he's. He's topped the charts. He's got.
Maybe he's never had any in this country.
No, for
PJ
sure.
Maybe PJ and
has.
I are not stupid. I'm a music lover. He's a DJ.
You loved someone before you go. Bruises. He's got tons.
Now he you're does, just reading Google. What Google says.
Yeah, his songs. Yeah.
you're just giving us words.
His hit songs. Yeah.
Those are just titles. I don't know what those things mean.
Come on.
Well, you better bring your A game 2 hours from now. I want to hear some of his.
I'll bring some of his hits.
Previous hits.
His new song, his best songs, in my opinion. I love him. He's everywhere. I promise
Louis
you.
Louis Capaldi, of course. Yeah, I'm with PJ.
No.
We got nothing.
Well, I feel good. I like when I stump you guys because it means somebody else is learning something and they're going to have information
for
later.
You were going to do Chris Pratt, who's trending again.
The Mario
There's a
trailer.
New
yeah.
trailer and... But it's an old Chiggle. Story, right? Because he just uses his regular voice. So people are saying, that's not Mario. There should be some kind of little cartoonish tone he uses or the accent or
and
something.
But if he does that, does yeah. he get in trouble for
cultural appropriation?
Yeah.
And he doesn't
the new
have
world
the
we live in, PJ. These are good questions. I mean, me doing Louis Capaldi right now, am I going to get hate mail?
No, because you're Scottish.
Is that the rule?
That's yeah. absolutely.
Absolutely.
So yeah. If I were to do an Irish accent there this morning, would I get in trouble for that?
Well, I'm not going to get.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah.
Depends what you say.
I like when people could do different accents. You're right, PJ. It depends what you say. If I say I'm Scottish, I'm no spending a penny on that. We're very cheap. That would be a cultural stereotype.
Yeah.
And by the way, for the record, we Scots, we're not cheap or frugal. We're poor. The English stole all our money.
Is that what happened? Okay. I didn't know that.
We know about colonialism. Don't tell me I don't know about colonialism. Unite the crowns indeed. We never wanted you here in the first place. 6 o'clock. You just ask Lewis Capaldi. He'll tell you the same thing. Good morning, Rush. Good morning. The morning meeting live at 5. The 6 o'clock news is coming up.
Wake up in the... This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Well, good Wednesday morning. How are you? Listen, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the LRT today. It's in the newscasts. You've heard about it. Because I think we'll be spending a lot of time talking about this report tomorrow morning. And Friday morning, and next Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday, there's going to be a lot to it. And so, you know, I want you to know it's out there, that it's on our radar. And it's going to be kind of interesting to see how we got to where we are with the LRT. How did it get so colossally botched? How did we become a laughingstock in anywhere that even bothered to talk about Ottawa? So I'm not going to pretend we became a worldwide laughingstock, because we didn't. Most people didn't care. Even as close as Toronto, you know, probably the biggest city close to us, right? Montreal is a little smaller and closer, but okay. So in the big Ontario metropolis, people kind of know we have a botched train system. When I talk to friends there, it's like, yeah, you guys, what happened with your trains? They don't work, huh? That's about it. But still, embarrassing enough, right? And up until the COVID lockdowns, it was very inconvenient for people, just how unreliable the system turned out to be. Then, in a weird way, they got lucky and the COVID lockdowns came and nobody talked about it anymore. You have to remember, there was a time when we were in our traffic reports each and every day reporting on how many trains actually rolled out to service in the morning. And did it meet the minimum requirement? Remember that? Every day. Only 7 trains out there this morning, so there are going to be delays. Now, even if a train stops on the tracks, it kind of gets a mention, but so few people are using the system, relatively speaking, that it doesn't impact on many people's lives. That is probably the biggest issue facing us long term, is not how we got here, it's where the hell are we going with this thing? I mean, maybe it will be a bigger problem if the federal government forces people back to work. And there's just a little tiny buzz out there that the federal government may be getting serious about forcing more people back to work. A union representing Canada Revenue Agency employees, that's very specific, isn't it? Says the federal government is proposing a number of demands that I think would force people back to work. It's not directly to do that, but reduce the pay for employees working from home. This proposal, and it's released by PIPSC. I don't know if they try to turn that into a word or not. PIPSC? Never heard it before. This is their union. Shows that the feds want to differentiate between overtime and standby pay for employees who work from home and those required to be at the workplace. Their union president, Jennifer Carr, says they are, you'll be shocked to hear this, they are totally against this.
Most of my members are being paid for their mental work, for the benefit they're bringing, not necessarily where they're working from. But we really want to make sure is that employees are paid the same amount, whether they are working from home or in the office, because it's about fair compensation for the work that you do.
Yeah, but I'm sure in the past, the union has argued about the costs of going to work, right? Our membership needs more. It's very expensive to park or to use public transit or, right? Their expenses, I'm sure, along the way were part of the conversation. Probably more than offset these days by inflation. But here's why I might agree with the union. I'd like to hear more about this. But on the idea of people being on standby, this is a conversation I've been involved with in management in broadcasting and as an employee. I've been on both sides of the argument about people who are on standby. That was pretty common in news departments back in the day where, okay, you're the reporter on standby this weekend, so you don't have to be out and working, but if anything big happens, you need to be close to home because you're on call, right? And then the management would often treat it as, well, it's not a work day. You were simply on call. Yeah, but if I'm on call, it changes how I live my life, right? If you're on call on a Saturday and all your friends say, hey, let's follow the Senators down to Montreal and watch the Canadiens game. Yeah, let's do that. You go, no, I can't. I'm on call. I have to stay closer to home. So are you working or are you not working? And how do you compensate for that time? If you say, well, you're not actually working, but you're ready to work if you have to, so that should pay you less than a normal workday. Okay, I might offset that by saying, yeah, but it's not a normal workday. It's a Saturday. So if I was working, I'd get time and a half or an extra day off or however you structure it. So I should get, if I get a reduction in pay for being on call, then it should be a reduction based on the maximum amount I'd get for working weekends. So that's a tough one. That's a tough one. So now I don't know why an employee with Revenue Canada would be on standby. So I need to know more about that. But anyway, kind of interesting, right? As we wait for the LRT inquiry, there's a little bit of a noise out there that the federal government is looking at people working at home and saying, maybe we need to change our view on all of this. Maybe we need to tweak things a little bit. So the economy is slowing down, but they can't get it to fully stop or go backwards, at least. Stats Canada numbers came out yesterday, and the economy grew at an annualized rate of 2.9% in the third quarter. The quarterly growth was lower than that, getting closer to zero. But the CIBC Executive Director of Economics, it is Carney Charbonneau, says a closer look at the real gross domestic product data, though, shows there's definitely some weakening out there, which the Bank of Canada, which is trying to slow the economy down, is going to be happy about.
Really, the thing to remember here is sometimes the headline numbers look one way and the rest is quite a bit different. I think this is a typical example of that type of report.
Yeah, in some areas like consumer spending, you're really starting to see the economy contract. And maybe even more importantly for the short term, people are just spending less. Even heading into the holiday season, we're starting to bank more money. The average savings for a Canadian has started to creep up. People are going, well, I think the economy's okay now, but I'm worried about next year. So maybe it's time to put some money aside and be ready for the fallout if there's a recession. I mean, maybe I'm going to lose my job, or maybe I need to hang on to this money. If something goes wrong, I'm going to need it because everything is costing more. It's like you have to start saving up money now to buy a tomato, because who knows what that's going to cost in January, right? So anyway, kind of interesting. The GDP is slowing down, but not as quickly as some expected. And the Bank of Canada their plan has been to slow it down without it grinding to a halt. That's a lot trickier to do. Ontario pharmacists will soon be allowed to prescribe medication for 13 minor illnesses. Starting January 1 now, pharmacists will hand out medicine for things like tick bites, pink eye, cold sores. Now, your first thought might be a pharmacist, not a doctor. How are they going to diagnose that? Well, I think pink eye is probably pretty obvious. Tick bites, maybe that's a little trickier. And cold sores, yeah. Jen Belcher is vice president of the Ontario Pharmacists Association. This is her insight on that.
As a pharmacist, where I've had lots of my own patients come in and, you know, with some of these ailments, and I've had to refer them out to walk-in clinics, potentially seeing them come back with a prescription, but sometimes coming back and still looking for over-the-counter options because they can't be seen. I see this as a really, really positive step forward to creating access for people at a time when we need it most.
Yeah, that would be frustrating if you're the pharmacist, right? You look, you go, yeah, I got pink eye. Go to the doctor. They come back, got a prescription for pink eye. Okay, well, I could have done that. On the other hand, I don't know, trying to think like a doctor, maybe there are other symptoms that go along with that pink eye that a doctor might pick up on that someone who's not trained as a physician might not notice. Maybe with pink eye, it's straightforward. But there have to be other things where what looks like one thing could actually be a symptom of something else or some more complicated systemic issue that you're having medically. I don't know. But it would be kind of nice to be able to walk into the pharmacy and not spend 5 hours waiting in a walk-in clinic somewhere trying to get help for something that appears pretty obvious. 6:16, it's the Morning Rush. Good morning, I'm Bill Carroll.
This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Wanted to say congratulations to Julie Gonneau, who won $1,000 today, or is, well, he's winning it right now from the Bingoland Gaming Center Grand in Your Hand prize. So if you want to enter to win, you can do that. A couple of opportunities. You'll get the code words after the 7 o'clock news and after the 8 o'clock news this morning. Yeah, I know. It's like we're trying to convince you to listen. That's sort of the point. Well, you think we're just going to give you cash for nothing? No, you have to listen to the show. That's the deal. And if you're really paying attention, there's another $1,000 on the line in the 8 o'clock hour with the $1,000 minute. So a couple of opportunities to win $1,000 coming up on the show later this morning. Yeah, we're willing to bribe you. We don't care. We'll do what it takes. I think I've lost my interest in Canada at the World Cup of soccer. You know, I was trying to keep my excitement up after they were eliminated. And I know there's one more game to play. But and then I had to make an appointment and it's something I need to take care of that I've been meaning to do for a while. And when they suggested it was tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, I looked at it and I thought, do I want to stay home and watch the game? And I ultimately thought, no. Because even if they win, listen, it would be a bit of an accomplishment if they win. It'd be nice because if we were that excited about a goal, then a win would be something. But is that enough to keep me home? If I'm home, I'd watch. But the team is trying to get us excited. They did their media availability yesterday. So this is Alfonso Davies really talking about it for the first time. I know he did one interview, but he didn't come out and do a press conference after he scored the winning goal in the losing game. But Alfonso Davies met with the media yesterday, and he says the celebration was as memorable as the goal itself.
When they all came around me, you know, a lot of players were, you know, grabbing my jersey, pushing me, shoving me. I had Leon Miller headbutt me at one point. He was so excited. And we both looked at each other and started laughing. So, yeah, the moment was truly amazing with these guys.
Do you think that maybe they made too much of the goal? That we made such a big deal out of it? You know, right? Canada has never scored in the Men's World Cup. Not that we've been there a lot, but, you know, we never scored a goal. And that would be a big accomplishment. And then it came really early on. They scored. Everybody went crazy. Maybe they kind of let down a little bit after that, that they'd already felt they accomplished something. I don't know. It's just it's a thought. Because after that, they kind of got dominated. Partly because they ticked off the other team with their celebration after the last game where they didn't even win, but they played well. So we celebrated a good loss, and then we celebrated a goal, and then we had nothing left. So we're leaving the tournament after the first round, but Davies actually says people like me, I guess, should still watch because the country is still making its mark.
And yeah, I mean, we gained a lot of new, you know, supporters around the world. You know, a lot of people thought that, you know, Canada wasn't really a footballing country. And, you know, hopefully after this tournament, we've changed a lot of minds.
Yeah, listen, making that tournament is a big deal in and of itself. The country I was born in is ranked higher than Canada. Last I checked, just one above, actually. But Scotland is a country of, what, 6 million people or something? Small country. Still ranked higher than Canada, but they didn't make the World Cup. Because you still have to beat good teams to get there. Scotland played probably tougher teams than Canada did in order to get there, or in their case, not get there. But yeah, it's not nothing. I'm not trying to diminish their... And it would still be really interesting and exciting if they were to come back with a victory as well as a goal. That would also probably mean more goals too, right? Soccer, sometimes 0-0, 0-0 is seen as a victory. But you know, if they come back with a real win and they've scored some goals at the tournament, it wouldn't be nothing. So I'll keep an eye on it, but I don't know I'm going to be glued to it.
Fast kicking, low scoring, and ties.
That's soccer for you right there. 6:28, the Morning Rush.
Everyone has a reputation to defend. That's why on Wednesdays, we bring you The Reputation Rescue with Karen Gordon and Bill Carroll.
You see a situation that is an emergency, is out of control, is has a potential for real impact on citizens, potential for violence, real concerns about what's going on, not just in Ottawa, but right across the country. Coutts blockade that started up on the same first weekend that the Ottawa occupation did. These are the things that you say, okay, as we look at a whole range of potential outcomes in this, there might be a moment where we have to invoke the Emergencies Act.
The Emergencies Act. Reputations have been made and broken on less. It's been an interesting few weeks watching it all, and Karen Gordon of Gordon Strategy has been watching, and she has winners and losers on the reputation front. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Are there any winners, first of all? I mean, maybe winning is just coming out relatively unscathed in something like this.
Well, that was the goal, right? The winners are definitely the ones who have come out unscathed. And I think the biggest winner of all was the Prime Minister. I think he did really well. He was on the stand all day. He took a lot of grilling. And I think he came out of this unscathed. And I think he surprised a lot of us with how well he did. So from the public relations end, I think my big winner, Justin Trudeau. And you know it breaks my heart to say that. But
I know it doesn't. You know. You know, I felt the same way. And I got a few people reacting earlier in the week when I didn't talk about it very much. And when I did talk about it, I said, I actually think he handled it okay. To me, there wasn't that moment where he embarrassed himself or made it clear that he had no idea what he was talking about. I don't know that he was quite as good as you're saying, but I'd be close in my assessment. And I thought his strategy, it seemed to me from the outside, his strategy was he knew the questions, the friendly questions come first, right? And he knew the answers. He's great at memorizing talking points. He handled that. And then when it got a little tougher and he's being cross-examined, he tightened it up a lot. And he just said, you know, he didn't know or he wouldn't be aware of that or he wouldn't be the one to ask. And from his perspective, I think that was very smart.
I agree 100%. And if you follow me on social media, you'll know I'm extremely proud of my cousin, Jessica Barrow. She was counsel for the Ottawa Police Service. She cross-examined him. It was after the lunch break. I think there was probably three after her. And he was tight on his answers. And her questions were really good. You could tell he was getting a little bit frustrated, but he managed to rein it in. And, you know, when we talked when this was first going to happen, you and I talked about how this was as much an exercise in public relations as it is about getting to the answers and getting to the bottom of things. So when we look at it from that angle, he didn't lose his cool. Now, juxtapose that to, and this will come as no surprise, I'll let you guess who I think the biggest loser was in all of this.
Well, it has to be Ottawa's former police chief.
100%. And again, you know, we talked about that. His testimony went over a couple of days and went over a weekend. He was very frustrated and didn't have a lot of answers, didn't take any responsibility for what happened. And I think when we come out of this at the end, you will see that he was, in fact, the biggest loser coming out of this inquiry.
What about the Ottawa Police Service? How do you think longer term the reputation of the police service has been affected by this?
You know, I think it's been affected a little bit, but what I also think is the way things have rolled out, and don't forget, it's a paramilitary organization. Direction comes from the top. That's how they operate. So the more slowly wears this, the less the service wears it, believe it or not. That's how I see things. They have a new chief now. It's a fresh start. They're going to, you know, the results of this are going to come out in a few months. And I think in the end, the Ottawa police are going to be fine. I do believe that the chief is going to wear a lot of this. Because if you watch the way the questioning went and you watched over the course of it, and, you know, the inquiry was a bit of a, everybody pointing at everybody and so many different angles, civil liberty angles, trucker angles, all of those things. I think ultimately when we get this report, it's going to be big, it's going to be complicated, but it will put a lot of it on the chief.
How do you think the organizers came out of all of this? In the kind of the sober second thought phase of the protest, did they look like they had a point to make and that did they convince the public that they were largely peaceful and organized, or did they come out some other way? Did they win or lose on this one?
I thought they were heading into the last week. I thought they were doing fine. But then, you get kicked out, you get like that stuff matters from the public relations end, right? Like that kind of stuff really matters. I thought until the last week, they were it all seemed very rational. Their lawyers were very rational. Everything kind of ran counter to what we had expected, which I thought put them in a really good position.
Yeah, because at the beginning, my concern about it was, we were putting organizers, some of them who were very extreme and real conspiracy theorists, we were kind of putting them on equal terms with everyone else at the inquiry, right? Because I'm testifying, the prime minister's testifying, our opinions matter in both cases. But I think some of the, not just, you're talking mostly about the lawyer before and been getting kicked out and stuff for sure. His reputation, I think, took a beating, chasing someone down outside because they thought it was someone who was carrying a swastika at the meeting and pointing fingers at a public relations firm for a false flag episode, all that stuff. But the actual protesters themselves, I think in the end they came across exactly how I thought they would. They, instead of seeming measured and intelligent, we heard some of the crazy theories being spun out there and you just roll your eyes.
It's like it was all held together until the last. And here's a note to anyone. If you're going to say things about people, don't say things about someone whose job is public relations. Don't take on a public relations company. It's because they're going to react and they're going to react fast. It's what we do. And so I thought that the swastika, I thought that discussion was very bizarre. I thought the company, Enterprise, when they came back, was a good response in and around that, a great response in and around that. But it was very distracting and didn't help the credibility of anyone who was involved in the convoy.
Yeah, just slightly away from the reputation part of the conversation. You watched a lot of it. And do you think in the end, the public is going to, given how long it took and how many witnesses were there, will the public respect the results of this, whatever they are, do you think?
It's hard to tell. There are a lot of complicated, when you get into arguments around the charter, when you get into arguments around civil liberties, when you get into those discussions, they're very complicated. Like they're very complicated legal arguments. There was a reason there were so many lawyers in that room. So I think, I'm not sure. I think it'll be sort of like everything right now where we have this limited time span in our brain. We're all COVIDed out. That's what I think. I think we're all COVIDed out after spending, 2.5 years in the midst of this pandemic. Our ability to absorb news, our ability to absorb big weighty issues, I think has shrunk. And I think we move, we go from story to story to story to story. It doesn't.
Yeah, and the act itself says if you use the act, then you have to explain it later in a public inquiry. But there's a reason you delay that for a while. You don't do it in the immediate aftermath because people forget. And and when it's something like this, it's a lot of stress built around it. You don't want to go back and think about it too much. And then if you can complicate it, people tune out and they just go back to whatever their original position was. It's easier just to default to that. I'm happy they did it. So whatever, it's over, fine, I don't care. Or this was an outrage that they used this much power, then your position stays that way. I feel like I'm simplifying it too. And for me, that is, if it's still this complicated after this much testimony, then they probably shouldn't have used it. It should be, I think, clear cut. Not, we thought it might get violent and we might need it to get tow trucks, so I think we're going to use all this power. To me, that wasn't good enough. But I don't think that's going to be the majority view.
No, and I think we're just overwhelmed, and I agree with you 100%. We've kind of put it to the side. I will tell you, another person who came out not looking very good is the commissioner of the RCMP, Brenda Luckey. It was not,
oh, good point.
A good 3 weeks for her. Now everybody knows her name, and not in a good way. Probably, you know, if we were to do the $1,000 minute, probably only a quarter of the people who do your $1,000 minute could have named her before. Everybody can name her now.
Yeah.
And so I don't think she came out very well. And I think one of the number one lessons, we talk about lessons that people that the listeners can understand. One of the number one lessons is watch what you text.
Yeah.
Because we had lots of text messages coming out through the course of this, live with profane language and lots of text messages coming out. I think, you know, if we're going to learn anything, just especially if you are in a position of power, watch what you text.
Hey, and you've reminded me, just make it quick if you can, because we're over time here. But
yeah.
The OPP went into it, I think, you know, they denied Ottawa police the services they need. I mean, the early days, it looked like they were holding back. But I thought in the end, they came across as an organization as thoughtful and ready to help and just, you know, waiting for the right questions to be asked and the right requirements. And they were ready to step in. I thought they came out okay on it.
I like the OPP commissioner, Thomas Creek. He's very good. I think the OPP came out looking really good. The other one I think who came out looking really good, because we're not talking about him, is Bill Blair. We're not talking about him. It's hard to find anything when you Google him. He came up, did his testimony, and that's a guy who had been through the G20. He's been the chief of police. He's been Slowly's boss. And I thought it was really hard to find kind of coverage of his thing, which is actually your goal. Your goal is to get
the real winner, though, Karen. I got to let you go. Make your point about the goal. Your goal is
not to have a news story. Your goal is to get in and out. That's a win. If you can do no damage to yourself, that's the win of the inquiry.
Okay, but the real winner, hands down, no one can argue, lawyers and billable hours. Karen Gordon of Gordon's Strategy with Reputation Rescue. It's The Morning Rush. I guess I should have checked the social media of some of the truck protesters and those organizations, because I bet there's sort of a collective eye roll from people who protested here in Ottawa last winter that the Prime Minister is now telling China, you got to listen to people when they're protesting mandates. He is maybe a little bit vulnerable on that one. But the mandates in China, I would say, you know, if you were in Ottawa and you're, you know, freedom, freedom, that's what real crackdowns look like. I mean, China has been brutal, complete and absolute lockdowns. There was, I don't know if you've seen this, but there was a fire in an apartment building that killed, I think, 8 to 10 people in China. This is this week, because the barriers that they put up to lock people in their apartments when there's a COVID outbreak, the barriers got in the way of the fire trucks who were firing water from a distance. It couldn't even reach the top floor of this apartment building as the flames were just pouring out of the building. I mean, it's horrific there. And I was feeling like, wow, there's something going on in China where these protests were very widespread. Dozens of cities, thousands of people, all ages, walks of life. But I understand from what I've seen in the updates this morning that things have calmed down a little bit. And that's what happens in a dictatorship when you have complete control of the media and you're willing to use whatever force is necessary. You can put an end to it. And that's what they've done. I think Tiananmen Square is a good example of how they handle protests and dissent. The head of the International Monetary Fund, though, is telling China, look, you got to get away from these mass lockdowns. This zero COVID approach isn't working. Well, now they say that, but this comes days after the protests broke out, and the argument from the International Monetary Fund is an economic one. They're saying, look, it's hurting your economy, China's economy. It's hurting all of our economies. Their managing director, Kristalina Georgieva, says nations have to look at the big picture when dealing with COVID-19.
We see the importance of moving away from massive lockdowns, being very targeted in restrictions, so that targeting allows to contain the spread of COVID without significant economic costs.
Yeah, slow it down, flatten the curve. The problem is, even in our democracy, we started to move more towards zero COVID, right? We never got that far. There's certainly lots of TV doctors who would tell us every day, no, we need more lockdowns. We need to close the schools again. There were people who, I guess, believed if we just all stay apart long enough that COVID would be gone forever. Our prime minister says people in China expressing dissent against their government have a right to do so. That's where the collective eye roll comes from, the protesters in this country. He responded to the protests on his way into a cabinet meeting.
Canadians are watching very closely. Obviously, everyone in China should be allowed to express themselves, should be allowed to share their perspectives and indeed protest. We're going to continue to ensure that China knows we'll stand up for human rights.
Right, he believes that. Unless, of course, the protests in his country don't quite conform to the legal definition of an emergency, then you can just reinterpret them in the way you want, and there's these extraordinary powers, and just explain it later. Then it's a different thing. And I'm not totally comparing the two, but come on, the irony can't be lost on us, right? When we hear the prime minister talking in such blunt terms about how China needs to listen to the protesters. Maybe if he'd listen to those truck drivers on the way here, and I am not rewriting history for you or them or for myself. If you've been listening to me, you know that even as the truckers were heading here, I said, you know, I don't like the messengers, but their message may not be wrong. It may be time to lift the vaccine mandates on truckers because the vaccines are not doing what they used to do. They're not stopping the spread. And anyway, we need them, and they're mostly in their trucks, and we have mask mandates if they get out of their truck. This is not new. I was saying this all along. And if the prime minister had recognized that, if he'd listened to the cries of Canadians, instead of demonizing them, maybe we wouldn't have had to have an Emergencies Act and a subsequent inquiry. Maybe. We'll never know for sure. But I think he could have listened more. There were rational people they could have talked to. I would have met like with truckers associations and others because they weren't all in on the protest. And I would have said, look, speaking to them, we think we can lift the mandates and we're going to do it in 2 weeks. Might have taken the steam out of those protests as they built up heading across the country. Anyway, still on the issue of China, the opposition conservatives spent most of the question period demanding answers from the prime minister on whether he was ever briefed on foreign influence of any kind during our elections. I got to admit, based on his answers in the past, I'm not entirely sure where he stands on that. The prime minister insisted, no, he was not briefed on foreign funding to election candidates. The public safety minister, though, did the heavy lifting and answered most of the questions. Marco Mendicino says, a review of recent federal elections did not reference any such allegations.
Now, this review was carried out by nonpartisan professional public servants so that we could all be sure that our elections were free and fair. And that is precisely what they confirmed. And now our government continues to be vigilant against all forms of foreign interference by giving law enforcement and national security partners the tools that they need to do so.
If it's true and they weren't briefed on that, they didn't know about it, maybe we should also be talking about why that's true. How our government didn't know about something that important. Anyway, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre, not happy with the vague answers, pushing for specifics.
I have now asked 7 times that first the Prime Minister refused to give a proper answer, and now he's refusing to even take to his feet and face the question. So one last time, was he ever briefed on interference by foreign actors in our elections, yes or no?
And the Prime Minister stood up and said,
as our intelligence services have highlighted many times in many different fora for Canadians, interference in Canadians' affairs by foreign powers is an ongoing thing, whether it's cyber interference, whether it's interference with communities here in Canada, whether it's attempts to influence the media. These are things that go on an ongoing basis, and things that our intelligence agencies and police agencies work very, very hard to counter. But Canadians can be reassured that the integrity of our elections was not compromised.
Say, how did that sound like an answer to the actual question to you? The question was, were you briefed? And the answer was, these things are ongoing and, you know, don't worry, the election wasn't compromised. No, but were you briefed? Did the opposition leader accept that as an answer? What do you think?
The question was not whether the election was compromised. The question was whether officials in intelligence, law enforcement, or the public service at any time informed the Prime Minister of allegations of any interference in our elections. Yes or no?
That seems straightforward. Let's see what he says this time.
The member opposite brought in the element of allegations of interference. I can confirm, based on the news reports that a number of people have been remarking on for the past number of weeks, that I have never gotten any information from any of our security agencies or police officers or intelligence officials or public servants on any information on anyone receiving, as a federal candidate, receiving money from China, as the allegations highlighted.
A little confused there at the beginning of why the media reports had to be brought into that, but I guess there's the answer on the record. He hasn't been briefed. Should that turn out to be not true? I guess we can deal with that later. But it does raise the other question. Why weren't you then? What went wrong? What's wrong with our intelligence services that didn't know about that at the time? 7:15, The Morning Rush.
This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
You have my permission, Katie, to just slap me down if you ever hear me use the acronym GOAT. Don't let me do it. I know it's sort of trendy right now to say GOAT. Just heard it in the commercial. Greatest of all time. She's the GOAT. That's a terrible sounding expression. Well, because a GOAT, we've already established when you call someone the GOAT, it's short for scapegoat, which means you're getting the blame for something. It's got to be the opposite of the greatest of all time. So, no, I don't like it. But I'm not going to be able to stop it, I recognize. That's what people are going to say. That's the new word. PJ, I want you to go back and play something for me, that last Trudeau clip, because one of our listeners said, listen again, Bill. He never did ask the question about whether or not he was briefed on candidates who received money. He didn't actually say that. Listen carefully. Okay, so I'll listen again. Let's check it out.
The member opposite brought in the element of allegations of interference. I can confirm, based on the news reports that a number of people have been remarking on for the past number of weeks, that I have never gotten any information from any of our security agencies or police officers or intelligence officials or public servants on any information on anyone receiving, as a federal candidate, receiving money from China, as the allegations highlighted.
Well, I mean, it's a very lawyerly response, isn't it? It sounded like someone gave him a very specific answer. The question was, were you briefed at all? And he said, well, not if you're talking about the media reports on specific candidates. And he did go back there. He sort of paused to make sure he got that phrase in, specific candidates. So, no, it's true. He answered a question, but he didn't answer the question, which is kind of typical. Hey, is the federal government actually starting to squeeze their employees to come back to work? A union representing the Canada Revenue Agency employees says there's a proposal from the federal government. Number of things. Demands to reduce pay for employees working from home. Their union, I don't know if there's an acronym for this. It's PIPSC, PIPSC. I don't know. I've never heard of this particular union, but this proposal released by PIPSC shows that the, or is that some other agency? I don't know. The feds want to differentiate between overtime and standby pay for employees. Yeah, it's the union. PIPSC is the union. They released the proposal from the government. So the idea would be differentiate between overtime and standby pay for employees who work from home and those required to be at the workplace.
Here's Most union of my president members are being-
Jennifer Carr.
most of my members are being paid for their mental work, for the benefit they're bringing, not necessarily where they're working from. But we really want to make sure is that employees are paid the same amount, whether they are working from home or in the office, because it's about fair compensation for the work that you do.
She says the federal proposal wants to change the overtime and standby pay, and it should be the same. Home, work, it doesn't matter.
We're trying to make sure that as we progress, we have the same provisions regardless of where you work. We do that also as well for rates of pay, of course. There are slippery slopes that we don't want to go down because, again, we're equal work for equal pay. Taking in all these other factors is not usually something that we do when we go for collective agreements.
I bet that sometime in the past, their union has argued that expenses are going up for their workers and that's why they need a raise. I bet they've done that. And I bet when they talk about expenses, they've included the costs of traveling to and from work, the cost maybe of parking, the extra costs of eating away from home. I bet somewhere along the line, they've said, you know, it's expensive to come downtown and work for the federal government. I bet they've done that. So does the government then have a right to say, look, you're avoiding some of those expenses now. We think you should make less. Because the people that you work with who show up at the office, you have an unfair advantage over them. Your money goes longer, farther from paycheck to paycheck than theirs does. I think that's going to be an interesting conversation to have. The counter argument, I guess, could be, yeah, but inflation means the cost of everything has gone up. So we'd be asking for a raise anyway. So we're not giving you back money. The issue with that argument is, okay, but there's still a difference between workers who spend money to come to work and the ones who stay at home. Then I'd counter-argue again and say, yeah, but the ones who stay home, their heating costs at home are higher because they have to keep the house warmer than when they were away from home. And in the summer, they have to keep it cooler and the costs of electricity are higher because I'm using computers and whatever. I mean, this argument could go on and on. But to me, just the underlying story is the important one here. It seems there's finally a little pushback from the federal government saying, not come back to work, but if you're not going to come back to work, there may be some consequences to that. This is just the beginning of that battle, I'm sure. It's 7:28, The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Wake up in the
and shout and let it all out and scream and shout and let it out. We say it all.
This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
So far, this flu and RSV pandemic and endemic, whatever it's called, so far it's mostly affecting our pediatric hospitals. And there aren't that many of those in Ontario. There are a handful of them. And that's putting pressure on other hospitals. People are now showing up with their children. And we've actually been asked to. CHEO has said, look, if your kid is 14 or older, please don't bring them to CHEO. Take them to one of the other general hospitals. But places like Brockville, Kingston General, are now seeing their pediatric areas being overloaded as a result of that. Jason Hahn is the Executive Vice President of Patient Care with Kingston Health Sciences Center, and he's on the line with us right now. Says three patients came in on Monday night alone. Good morning, Jason. Thanks for talking to us.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So are you talking about patients who drive there on their own, or are they transferred from Sick Kids in Toronto or CHEO or other hospitals?
So what we're experiencing at Kingston Health Science Center, there's about 20 pediatric patients from out of region, so other parts of Ontario, that are transported to Kingston Health Science Center for access to pediatric critical care services. So they come via helicopter emergency services. So these are quite ill children. And what we're seeing, most of these children are 2 years old or less.
So it's not the 14 to 18-year-olds you're seeing primarily. It's really young children, infants.
Primarily really young children that require admission to hospital. So whether they go to an emergency department closest to their home and the pediatric facility that's close to them don't have the capacity. We work in a provincial system, so they are transferred to the next available center that can provide that level of care.
Right. Now, you must have some ability to handle that anyway, right? Because you don't have a specific children's hospital in Kingston. So I'm sure you have facilities to handle children even that young.
Yeah, absolutely. We provide pediatric neonatal pediatric services at Kingston Health Science Center. So we do have a pediatric inpatient unit as well as a pediatric critical care unit. And we provide outpatient services for pediatric patients for assessments and care.
But I imagine there's also situations that arise where you say, you know what, this child would be better off transferred to a hospital that has the specific ability to deal with children.
Yes, we for sure. You know, we look at what the facility can provide and the level of care, and do we have that specialization to provide that care when making those decisions.
Has this changed your ability to deal with children locally in Kingston? Is it putting pressure on you there, or are you still managing to cope?
So we're seeing a huge increase in the local area for you know, access to care for pediatrics, so respiratory type illnesses. So we're quite stretched from it comes from a capacity point of view. I mean, our pediatric unit this morning is operating at 150% occupancy, so significant increase in the demand for services. And considering, you know, the children that are requiring care, we make decisions and work with our teams to create that capacity. So we've ticked one of our inpatient medicine units, which is close to our pediatric unit. We've transition that to a pediatric unit to create that capacity. So lots of work ongoing at Kingston Health Science Center to make sure that we're able to respond to the local as well as the provincial need for pediatric patients in Ontario.
When you say 100% of capacity, what does that mean in real numbers? Are we talking 15 as opposed to 10 children?
So what we're operating at this morning, you know, we usually run between 10 to 15, 10 to 12 pediatric patients. We're at 23 this morning in our pediatric unit.
Well, that's, I mean, I guess it'd be easy to say that's not a lot of children, but it is, right? Because when they're this sick, it requires a lot of staff. It's easy to say, just give them an ICU bed, but a bed means nurses, doctors, other professionals to support them, right? So it's when you have numbers that are that much bigger, you must really put a strain on staff.
Absolutely. You know, we've been working with our teams to make sure that we're able to upskill some of our staff across the organization to be able to mobilize resources to our pediatric unit to care for the patients and families that come to us. And you're absolutely right. I mean, there's nurses, physicians, allied health professionals, support services that's required to care for this patient population.
Yeah. Have you lost any children there, or are you managing to give them the support care they need and getting children in and out?
So we've been very, you know, we're providing the care, and what we're seeing is there's a decrease in RSV, but we're seeing more and more children present with flu-like illnesses. So we're able to provide that level of care, and they're responding well. You know, much more high need for hospitalization, and we're seeing it much earlier in the fall, the RSV as well as flu now in children.
Well, I have two kids. I mean, they're high school age now, but it's just been unbelievable how many respiratory ailments they've had. And, you know, you often don't know, is this COVID? Is this a bad cold? Is this the flu? Is it RSV? And I'm sure they've had a number of those different things just in the past month or two. We're hearing in Ontario, you're seeing a bit of a decline in RSV, but flu is still, you're still seeing an uptick there. Is that what you're seeing in Kingston?
Yes, that's what we're seeing is in the pediatric and in our population, decreased RSV and increase in flu numbers or flu adults, as well as pediatric patients that are presenting for care in our emergency departments and in our outpatient clinics.
Are you seeing any COVID patients?
We've seen a significant decrease in COVID over the last few weeks and the increases in flu-like symptoms now, or flu-like illnesses, right?
So flu is the big issue right now, and there's a vaccine for that, and we see the uptake is a little bit low. As someone who's in charge in a hospital like this and you're overwhelmed, that has to be pretty frustrating.
So, you know, from a public awareness and, you know, education perspective, I mean, I really recommend and encourage, you know, good hand hygiene, get your flu shot for yourself, for your children, get your COVID booster shots. And if you're sick, you know, stay home. And if you don't see your symptoms residing, then, you know, seek access to care.
Well, we've started to think of the flu, maybe we always did, as kind of a minor illness, right? It's a lot of people, when they have the common cold, they come back to work after a couple of days and they say, yeah, I had the flu. Well, you probably didn't really have the flu. The flu can hit you hard and it can take a long time to get over it. Can you maybe describe how sick some of these children are? It's not just the flu. I mean, many of these kids without hospital support would be in real trouble, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. And that's, you know, the demand for services, you know, as we're responding, that there's a number of children coming from out of region due to the demand in the system. So a lot of the local pediatric centers are full, so requiring transfer to other centers. And, you know, they're being admitted. They have needs for high oxygen requirements. You know, they're having trouble breathing, you know, shortness of breath. Their oxygen levels are down. And you know, in the smaller population, when children are two or less, you know, they're quite vulnerable. So they come to our hospital. We have a great team to provide the care for them, and hopefully to get them better pretty soon.
Keep up the good work. Thanks for updating us.
Thank you.
Jason Han, the Executive Vice President of Patient Care with Kingston Health Sciences Center, where they're very busy right now, and sounds like flu and then to a lesser degree RSV are the primary drivers of this. But, you know, when your kids are sick, they need help. Doesn't really matter which one it is. Except that in the case of flu, there's a very effective vaccine. And maybe we're seeing a decrease in COVID patients in these hospitals because so many people are vaccinated. Because, you know, we were talking about 90% of people getting their COVID shots, more like 40% getting the flu. And the shot apparently this year is very effective. They really got a close match to what is prevalent right now in Ontario. So it's worthwhile getting. Sore arm for a day or two. Sounds like it's worth it to me. Good trade-off. The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. And shout and let it all out. And scream
and shout and let it out. We say it all. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
So far, this flu and RSV pandemic and endemic, whatever it's called, so far it's mostly affecting our pediatric hospitals. And there aren't that many of those in Ontario. There are a handful of them. And that's putting pressure on other hospitals. People are now showing up with their children. And we've actually been asked to. CHEO has said, look, if your kid is 14 or older, please don't bring them to CHEO. Take them to one of the other general hospitals. But places like Brockville, Kingston General are now seeing their pediatric areas being overloaded as a result of that. Jason Han is the Executive Vice President of Patient Care with Kingston Health Sciences Center, and he's on the line with us right now. Says three patients came in on Monday night alone. Good morning, Jason. Thanks for talking to us.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So are you talking about patients who drive there on their own, or are they transferred from sick kids in Toronto or CHEO or other hospitals?
So what we're experiencing at Kingston Health Science Center, there's about 20 pediatric patients from out of region, so other parts of Ontario, that are transported to Kingston Health Science Center for access to pediatric critical care services. So they come via helicopter emergency services. So these are quite ill children. And what we're seeing, most of these children are 2 years old or less.
So it's not the 14 to 18-year-olds you're seeing primarily. It's really young children, infants.
Primarily really young children that require admission to hospital. So whether they go to an emergency department closest to their home and the pediatric facility that's close to them don't have the capacity. We work in a provincial system, so they are transferred to the next available center that can provide that level of care.
Right. Now, you must have some ability to handle that anyway, right? Because you don't have a specific children's hospital in Kingston. So I'm sure you have facilities to handle children even that young.
Yeah, absolutely. We provide pediatric, neonatal pediatric services at Kingston Health Science Center. So we do have a pediatric inpatient unit, as well as a pediatric critical care unit. And we provide outpatient services for pediatric patients for assessments and care.
But I imagine there's also situations that arise where you say, you know what, this child would be better off transferred to a hospital that has the specific ability to deal with children.
yes, we for sure. You know, we look at what the facility can provide and the level of care, and do we have that specialization to provide that care when making those decisions.
Has this changed your ability to deal with children locally in Kingston? Is it putting pressure on you there, or are you still managing to cope?
So we're seeing a huge increase in the local area for you know, access to care for pediatrics, so respiratory type illnesses. So we're quite stretched from it comes from a capacity point of view. I mean, our pediatric unit this morning is operating at 150% occupancy, so significant increase in the demand for services. And considering, you know, the children that are requiring care, we make decisions and work with our teams to create that capacity. So we've ticked one of our inpatient medicine units, which is close to our pediatric unit. We've transition that to a pediatric unit to create that capacity. So lots of work ongoing at the Kingston Health Science Center to make sure that we're able to respond to the local as well as the provincial need for pediatric patients in Ontario.
When you say 100% of capacity, what does that mean in real numbers? Are we talking 15 as opposed to 10 children?
So what we're operating at this morning, you know, we usually run between 10 to 15, 10 to 12 pediatric patients. We're at 23 this morning in our pediatric unit.
Well, that's, I mean, I guess it'd be easy to say that's not a lot of children, but it is, right? Because when they're this sick, it requires a lot of staff. It's easy to say, just give them an ICU bed, but a bed means nurses, doctors, other professionals to support them, right? So it's when you have numbers that are that much bigger, you must really put a strain on staff.
Absolutely. You know, we've been working with our teams to make sure that we're able to upskill some of our staff across the organization to be able to mobilize resources to our pediatric unit to care for the patients and families that come to us. And you're absolutely right. I mean, there's nurses, physicians, allied health professionals, support services that's required to care for this patient population.
Yeah. Have you lost any children there, or are you managing to give them the support care they need and getting children in and out?
So we've been very, you know, we're providing the care, and what we're seeing is there's a decrease in RSV, but we're seeing more and more children present with flu-like illnesses. So we're able to provide that level of care, and they're responding well. You know, much more high need for hospitalization, and we're seeing it much earlier in the fall, the RSV as well as flu now in children.
Well, I have two kids. I mean, they're high school age now, but it's just been unbelievable how many respiratory ailments they've had. And, you know, you often don't know, is this COVID? Is this a bad cold? Is this the flu? Is it RSV? And I'm sure they've had a number of those different things just in the past month or two. We're hearing in Ontario, you're seeing a bit of a decline in RSV, but flu is still, you're still seeing an uptick there. Is that what you're seeing in Kingston?
Yes, that's what we're seeing is in the pediatric and in our population, decreased RSV and increase in flu numbers or flu adults, as well as pediatric patients that are presenting for care in our emergency departments and in our outpatient clinics.
Are you seeing any COVID patients?
We've seen a significant decrease in COVID over the last few weeks and the increases in flu-like symptoms now, or flu-like illnesses, right?
So flu is the big issue right now, and there's a vaccine for that, and we see the uptake is a little bit low. As someone who's in charge in a hospital like this and you're overwhelmed, that has to be pretty frustrating.
So, you know, from a public awareness and, you know, education perspective, I mean, I really recommend and encourage, you know, good hand hygiene, get your flu shot for yourself, for your children, get your COVID booster shots. And if you're sick, you know, stay home. And if you don't see your symptoms residing, then, you know, seek access to care.
Well, we've started to think of the flu, maybe we always did, as kind of a minor illness, right? It's a lot of people, when they have the common cold, they come back to work after a couple of days and they say, yeah, I had the flu. Well, you probably didn't really have the flu. The flu can hit you hard and it can take a long time to get over it. Can you maybe describe how sick some of these children are? It's not just the flu. I mean, many of these kids without hospital support would be in real trouble, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. And that's, you know, the demand for services, you know, as we're responding, that there's a number of children coming from out of region due to the demand in the system. So a lot of the local pediatric centers are full, so requiring transfer to other centers. And, you know, they're being admitted. They have needs for high oxygen requirements. You know, they're having trouble breathing, you know, shortness of breath. Their oxygen levels are down. And you know, in the smaller population, when children are two or less, you know, they're quite vulnerable. So they come to our hospital. We have a great team to provide the care for them, and hopefully to get them better pretty soon.
Keep up the good work. Thanks for updating us.
Thank you.
Jason, I'm the Executive Vice President of Patient Care with Kingston Health Sciences Center, where they're very busy right now, and sounds like flu and then to a lesser degree RSV are the primary drivers of this. But, you know, when your kids are sick, they need help. Doesn't really matter which one it is. Except that in the case of flu, there's a very effective vaccine. And maybe we're seeing a decrease in COVID patients in these hospitals because so many people are vaccinated. You know, we were talking about 90% of people getting their COVID shots, more like 40% getting the flu. And the shot apparently this year is very effective. They really got a close match to what is prevalent right now in Ontario. So it's worthwhile getting. Sore arm for a day or two. Sounds like it's worth it to me. Good trade-off. The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Trending. Trending today.
With Katie Colbert. She's going to talk about someone that PJ and I don't think is all that famous. We never really heard the name.
This blows my mind. Louis Capaldi because he came out with an album a couple years ago. Sorry, I don't have the exact year, but he's kind of, you know, he's part of all of these sad songs. He's very similar to like Adele. He's got his best friend is Ed Sheeran. These are things, you know, he's out there in the media world. He's got a lot of good hits, including this one that I just quickly grabbed. So PJ can maybe recognize him a little here.
Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to give me
nothing.
It's no, just, that song I know, but I wouldn't have connected the name to it. Like, was it that big a hit though?
Yeah, this music bores me like nothing else. Like, it all sounds the same, and I don't care.
Everyone sort of, they all pout their lips,
yeah,
and they try to sing like Justin Bieber. And they stretch out the pronunciation of words. We talked a lot about that.
Flowers.
It's the weekend. Yeah. I'm going to sing with my lips like this. And they keep repeating the same phrase. And it's really kind of boring.
Trash. I think he's got some really good lyrics. I think he's got really good emotion and tone in his voice. Coming from, you know, loving musical theater and wanting to get emotion, raw emotion. He's got a beautiful, beautiful voice. And
I don't think so. I think it's an ordinary voice with he's just imitating a singing style that's popular right now.
I don't know. Bill. I disagree.
He's redundant. That's what we're saying, right, PJ?
Yeah. Yeah.
We already have 10 of him. We don't need an 11th.
But he's from Glasgow, so we don't have something from Scotland.
He's from a hometown area. It does, that raises his esteem a wee bit in my mind.
There you go. There's
you know what I do like about him? This guy in his video, he's in a swimming pool surrounded by babes, kind of typical, except that he looks more like me than PJ in a bathing suit. He's not a fit guy.
He wouldn't.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's not, you know, I think he's a cutie.
Those ladies were probably paid for the music video, though, so.
Yeah, I don't think absolutely. They were hanging around because of how he looked in his bathing suit.
Yeah.
But I think he's a cutie, but I know he might not be, you know, the typical standard conventional attractive man. But I think he's got a lot of charm, and his comedy makes up for it. Because the reason why this is all he's trending right now and being talked about is people, you know, refer to him as the king of TikTok every now and then. He's got an absolutely hilarious style when it comes to the videos that he posts and him trying to get his music out there and sharing. And, you know, he's coming out with this new song. It comes out in 2 days called Pointless. And he shared a snippet of it. And this is kind of one of the more emotional, beautiful TikToks that he posts instead of that comedic and outburst funny. Let's do clip number one.
I bring a coffee in the morning. She brings me in a piece. I take her out to fancy restaurants. She takes the sadness out of me.
I think it's beautiful.
He doesn't think that's going to be a hit, does he?
I think he's hoping.
That's the actual song, or that's just a YouTube?
That's just a snippet of it. Only 16 seconds of the song that's coming out in a couple days. I think it's beautiful.
Better than that, right, PJ?
Yeah, it's hard enough to stay up when you get up at 3 a.m., let alone listening to that stuff. Really wants to
Oh, I do it in my car drive every morning. I get emotional. I sing my little heart out on the way.
I'll send you some stuff to get you.
Oh, wait, no.
It all sounds no kind screamo. Of pointless to me.
Yeah.
Pointless.
Uh-huh. Where's the drums, the guitar solos?
This is just him, you know, giving a clip. Only 16 seconds. He's playing at the piano, filming for a TikTok. But, you know, maybe you're right, because Louis Capaldi is pleading with people to use this song in their TikToks because he's having a little bit of trouble getting promotions and
because it's boring and pointless. Do you have any more? Is that your last clip?
I have a couple clips here. There's
All right,
this...
get to them because we're not convinced.
Clip two.
Hello everybody, it's Louis Capaldi here. Can you use this sound, please? See this song that I've got attached? That's just going to make a TikTok with it. I'm at my wit's end. I don't know how to promote music on this app. If you want to giggle all day long on TikTok, I can do that. I can join in with that. This promoting music on it, I have no clue how it works. Make sure everyone's like, make Lewis, make sure people are making TikToks with the sound. I don't know what it means.
And then people are saying, yeah, we do want the laughing around. We don't necessarily want to make TikToks using this sound. But if you do, he does repost them so you can get, you know, your video shown on his page. But my favorite Louis Capaldi TikTok that he posted just last week is this one here. And I know Bill will appreciate this. Clip three.
I'll be home for Quizmas.
See, he's hip. He knows the Camila Cabello bit about Quizmas.
Quizmas.
I love Louis Capaldi.
A good way to promote your music is make good music. Like, then Ooh. People will promote it, right?
No, the first song we played of his is good. And we just heard the intro. Maybe it gets better. I'm going to be open-minded about it because my daughter played that first song for me one day in the car. I liked it. I'm a little sick of that particular sound. The Ed Sheeran, Justin Bieber, that I'm a little tired of that. We need to move on to it. We've gone through boy bands. Now we've gone through the Justin Bieber pouty lip thing. Could we move on now? That'd be nice. It would be nice if we could move on. And we could sing better than we've been singing before and pick some new notes. These are the same ones. That's Stop it already. Yeah. But he's from Glasgow, so I love him. The Morning Rush.
This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Crank that up a little, PJ.
You're leaving me blind, but don't leave me.
See, this is what I'm talking about when I say this Louis Capaldi guy is redundant. That could be him, too. It sounds exact. Who's that?
Preston Pablo and Banks Ranks.
Yeah, why do they all have to sound exactly the same right now? I don't... Somebody, come on, get on the edge and change the singing style a little bit. You could be scammed this holiday season. There are a lot of scams going around. And luckily, I'm pretty smart. I answered a text yesterday from Revenue Canada. Apparently, I have $363.32 waiting for me in account. All I need to do is answer their text. Give them my account number, and presto, pretty happy. I mean, I haven't filed lately. I don't know why there's money there, but that was weird. No. I did seriously get that yesterday. Don't do it. John Breo is National Consumers League Vice President of Public Policy, Telecommunications, and Fraud. John, in the case I'm just talking about with the Revenue Canada thing, what if I click on it, am I already in trouble and I've got some kind of virus on my phone? Or are they going to ask me now for more information? Where does that scam go? Do you know?
Yeah, well, when you click on a link like that, number one, you're probably inviting more phone calls or more text messages because the scammers know they've got somebody who will respond to their phishing texts. But what they will do probably is ask you for information. Like you mentioned, the account number. They'll ask you for sensitive information, maybe your email address or password combination. The best advice for most consumers is just don't respond at all to those text messages. Delete it. On Apple phones now, you can actually report them as junk when you delete them. So definitely take advantage of that.
Okay. So given the time of year, I would imagine a couple of things are, because we've got a bunch of scams that are going around. We don't have time to get to all of them, but this time of year with family and friends getting together could be the happiest, most fun time of year, also the loneliest. I would imagine those romance scams are particularly effective at a lonely time of year.
Yes, definitely. Romance scams are a scam that, while they're not the one that the most will fall victim to, it is does tend to be the one that's the most expensive for its victims. So when we look at the statistics on complaints, we'll see average losses well in excess of $1,000 to romance scams. But like you said, there are all kinds of scams that go around during the holiday season. The ones we're particularly warning consumers to be on the lookout for this year are fake online shopping scams. So everybody's looking for a deal. There are websites out there that offer you in-demand electronics or toys at a way below market rates. And really, they just exist to get your sensitive information or infect your computer with malware.
How can I tell the difference?
Well, you can tell the difference, number one, by taking a look at the prices and comparing them to what you see on other, you know, more reputable websites like Amazon or your local retailer. If you see that hot new toy or a PS5 that's like $100 under what's being charged elsewhere, chances are that it's a scam. Also, be really wary of unsolicited emails or ads you might see on social media that prompt you to click on them to get deep discounts on those gifts that everybody's after.
How do these prize scams work? Because that's always tempting, right? Ooh, maybe I did enter a contest or what, and I don't remember. I've got a prize waiting for me. Where are they going with that?
Well, the prize scams typically work where they ask you to pay some money up front before you can get the prize. So it may be for something like processing or taxes or something like that. But really, the prize is fictitious. All they're trying to do is keep you, stringing you along to keep paying money in search of this fictitious prize. The advice for consumers is really easy to remember. If somebody wants you to pay money in order to get money, it's a scam.
Every time.
Every time.
Just that's the rule. If you need to pay to get, and it doesn't matter how little, right? Because it's probably, they probably make more money as a scammer if you don't ask for too much, because you get a little bit from a lot of people, suddenly it adds up.
That's right. But also, once they get you on the hook and they start to get, they realize they can get a little bit of money out of you, they'll continue to make more asks and more asks, usually for increasing amounts of money, until you either catch on or you run out of money.
Apparently there's a Secret Santa scam going around. What's that?
Well, you know, Secret Santa scams, you know, most people are familiar with Secret Santas, and somebody may reach out to you via email or text and say, hey, we've got a gift for you. It's your Secret Santa. Just click on this link or reply and give us some more information. It's similar to the prize scam in that you're after something. In this case, it would be a Christmas present, but you're asked to provide information or money up front in order to get that.
Any others we should be looking for at this time of year?
Definitely. So all of us are looking for deals. Watch out for fake promo code sites. So if you've been online shopping, typically you'll see a little box during checkout that says enter your promo code here to get like a discount or free shipping or something like that. Scammers have latched on to that, and they are putting up fake websites, often trying to lure people to them with ads on social media or other places, promising discount codes. And what they're really after is getting you to provide them with sensitive information or go to websites that they can, where they get malware installed on your computer. The other one has to do with gift cards. So gift cards are always one of the top gifts that consumers get every year. And so you have these websites that pop up that say, you know, we are the gift card center. We are the place where you can get rid of your unwanted gift card, or you can get discount gift cards. So watch out for those. The best place to buy gift cards is from your local retailer.
Well, I don't know if we got 12, but we got a lot in there in a short period of time. Thank you, John.
No problem. And if you have been a victim of one of these scams, make sure and report it. Report it to your local police department or to our website at www.fraud.org.
People are usually too embarrassed to do that, aren't they?
That's unfortunately all too common in fraud. People feel like it's their fault. And scammers prey on that. They say, no one will believe you. Don't tell anyone. And because fraud is something where people are embarrassed to report it, that's how they get away with it.
Yeah, but that's their secret weapon. Don't be embarrassed. Lots of people, smart, people with great educations, we all can occasionally fall for them. Boy, they look really convincing at times. So, yeah, if we don't report it, we're not going to stop it. And they, you know, they do crack down on some of these scammers at times. It's not like they always go unpunished. So, great advice, John. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
John Brio, National Consumers League Vice President of Public Policy, Telecommunications, and Fraud. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill. The easiest way to tell a scam is when they don't know your full name and address. Just your email address. I received an email yesterday from Canada Revenue. Instead of it's my actual name. By the way, it's Revenue Canada, too. It's a tip-off there, but he points that out. If it's Dear Jeff 10-whatever, then it's fake. Doesn't know your actual name. Jeff says he sees it all the time. Louis Capaldi's album debuted at number one on BBC Top Albums of the years 2020 and 2019. And you never heard of him? Dropped to 16 for 2021 ahead of Foo Fighters at 56. See what he did there, the cheap shot, because you're a friend of one of the Foo Fighters, bigger than the Foo Fighters. You know what's interesting? First of all, we admit it. It's weird that we don't know. PJ and I hadn't heard the name. I knew one of the songs. It is a little weird. But you know what? I'm looking at chart positions for Divinely Uninspired to a Hellish Extent, his debut album. Number one in Scotland, where he's from. Australia, number seven. Belgium, number six. The UK, number one. In the US, number 20. So he is lesser known in North America. But he's also coming to Canada this coming year. He's on tour. So, okay, we already admitted we didn't know DJ PJ next door. Should have known better. But that's not a wedding song, is it? Would you play his music at a wedding?
I guess if I knew who he was. Nah, I wouldn't.
No, it's not a... It's too boring. It's maybe more of a funeral song than a wedding song. A little... Morning, Bill. Watched Collision last night. Loved it. Great actors. Great story. Although I did guess the ending. LOL. Love your show, Colleen. The Revenue Canada fraud is silly. They already go direct deposits to bank accounts as soon as your return is processed. Charles from Centertown. They do, although I do know a few people who still don't do that. They wait for the check in the mail. You know what? One day they'll be laughing at us and we're older. There'll be some new fancy way to get money, and we'll be like, no, I want direct deposit into my bank account. People say, you still have a bank account? That's not even a thing. Apparently, Louis Capaldi is related to Peter Capaldi, who Bill will know. Peter is Louis's father's second cousin, so probably share a humor gene. I don't know Peter Capaldi either. Do a quick Google search on Peter Capaldi. Good on Katie for holding her ground against Bill, LOL. And also, Bill, not happy your kids have been sick, but a relief to hear mine aren't the only ones. It's been virus after virus. Yeah, it sure has been. Kate, it sounds like you would leave your boyfriend for Louis. I've seen her boyfriend. I don't think so.
Maybe I'd think about it if he serenaded me with one of those songs. I would think about it. But Peter Capaldi is he's a Scottish actor. He was in Doctor Who, The Thick of It, The Devil's Hour, In the Loop, just to name a couple of movies.
Yeah, it may be a face that I know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen him. I've seen his face. Not that famous in North America either, but okay. I think we're about done here, huh? Yeah, let's wrap this up. We should read the last one from Sherilyn in Manitick, by the way. It says, great singing, Bill. Oh, thank you. My new Chris Moist album is coming out very soon. This has been The Morning Rush. Have a great day, everybody. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill.